want to tell you about something I've used and I truly believe in. Replayer. It's a sideline camera built for youth sports. Just set it up, hit record, and it captures the entire game automatically. No chasing the ball, no holding your phone, just hands-free, stress-free recording. The in-game tagging is one of my favorite features. One tap, and you can mark a big goal, ankle-breaking moves, or a clutch tackle. Then pull those clips for later for review, highlights, or social media. And the live streaming's next level. A buddy of mine actually watched his son's game while flying cross-country at 30,000 feet. That blew me away. If you're a parent or coach at the field every weekend, Replayer is a game changer. Head to replayer.com. That's Replayer.com. And I think you'll be amazed.
Hey, soccer friends. I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of Team Player's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give Team Player a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week I have Jason Cartney. He is the author of Great on Paper, but Shh on Grass. And this is part two of his episodes. I'm not going to say too much more. I'll give my full opinion at the end. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
Well, that would never happen, would it? Because in their mind, we've lost. So it sucks. So it's like, no one will be like, actually, we played really well. And lost, and that's where obviously coaches have got to be emotionally intelligent and say to their players, look, I thought we played, you know, you can play terrible and win.
I still, right, and we talk about that often.
I still think the players should know that. Obviously, not saying it like that, but hey, could be better. We weren't doing this, but good, you got the result you wanted, but we've got to be better than that. Where a parent is straight away. Is it a W? That was an amazing performance. And you're like, really? And I've said that sometimes. What game were you watching? That was poor. But yeah, it'd be nice to walk off and be like, that was a great effort, that coach from the team. And I don't think we don't put a lot into effort and character. Unfortunately, that's what I think at U Sports. And that's the stuff that really matters, effort and character.
So, going along this line, you talked about parents coming off the sideline. I at the end of the day, I probably can't tell you how many games my son wins or loses. I pay more attention in tournaments because that's the only time in my mind it really matters. They play in one league here where there's promotion and relegation. So I do keep track of where they're at in the standings. But at the end of the day, I can't tell you who wins or who loses. I might remember that for maybe a few minutes after the game or maybe Monday morning. But after that point, it's out of my mind because at the end of the day, it's the Landon or Thea work as hard as they possibly can in their game. I can't tell you how many times I've laid into my son and now my daughter for not working hard. Is at the end of the day, I can't do their technical side, their personal technical side, but I can probably outwork them still.
Yeah.
And as a parent, that's something we focus heavily on. And this kind of leads into something I find very important as an adult, especially in the business world. And it's, when you're looking at it, it's, you talked about we do too much, but it's learning to be servant leaders. It's something that I heard my whole life growing up is learning to be a leader through serving others. And how do we educate parents that this is not a weakness, that this is a strong suit in leadership? Because it's so backwards to our thinking in the corporate America side. And if you go back 30, 40 years in sports, this really didn't change probably until the mid 2000s, in my opinion. Here in the United States, you started to see the shift. How do you view this, and how do we educate parents to understand what this truly means? It's not just doing everything for them, but it's helping them, guiding them.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you really need to educate, say, like your members of the club, Ian. I'm not sure you need to educate them on that. I think you as a club need to go down that path of, obviously, soccer's expensive. And that's still really uncomfortable to me. It's like I grew up in a country where it was like next to nothing. So, and I've been here 21 years. The amount of money that parents pay is still really uncomfortable for me. But that's where we as a club say, okay, how are we going to add value for what parents are paying? And so I don't think I need to educate people on servant leadership. I just think you have to get out there, and your actions obviously speak louder than words. But it's always the staff that we have in the office. None of us have an agenda to make money. I'm not in this for the money. I'm in this because I love it, just like when I played. And I think your actions out on the field, your actions of how you interact with people, your actions of policies that you're putting in place for making the children better, I think all that just lets people know that, oh, they actually care. We do send out our game plan to the players that are U13 and above. We just don't think it's right at the moment to give it to a 10 and 11 year old. We're like, that might be too much for them. But the coaches in those age groups know that they're slowly going to implement how we play, but doing it slowly. But at U13, all the parents, all the kids get emailed the kids' plan, the game model that we want them to look at. We also do player evaluations, but we're saying to the player, hey, when we do this evaluation, you've got to fill it out first, because there has to be some accountability on this. And once you've filled it out, you give it back to the coach, we'll fill it out, and then you'll have a one-on-one and sit with them. But if you don't send it back, you won't receive one. So now that's teaching the accountability part, but it coincides with we're trying to be servant leaders and say, we're here to help. I always say that as a director. I'm not here to criticize any coach that I think is putting on a poor practice. I'm here to help. If I come out and you want me to pick the cones up, and that's all you want me to do, I'll pick the cones up for you. If it makes your practice session have a nice rhythm or it helps you in any way. But I think I wouldn't know how to educate someone on it, Ian. I just think the education, hopefully people see that what you're doing. If you are doing that and people are like, oh, Jason's selfish, and they'd be like, oh, really? I don't think I am. But maybe you don't understand what a servant leader is. I don't know. I wouldn't know how to educate someone on that. I think this is where I think US soccer kind of get it wrong. It's never, what can we do for you? I don't think that message ever comes from them. It's always, oh, Elite, our national teams are doing this. And that's where I think we're missing it. If you're ahead of an organization, you've got to be the one being like, what can I do for you? I think that should be the question you should ask all the people that are underneath you. How can I help?
I looking at it from a parent perspective, I think this is why I said educated. I don't think most people are accustomed to that. I think it is, they're just going to take my money. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get a coach assigned to me. Here's my fields.
Yeah.
And I don't think people truly understand what it means to be a servant leader.
Mm-hmm.
The way I was raised, that was one thing that they talked about, was you need to be a servant leader to everyone around you. It doesn't matter. And it's not kissing someone's behind. It's just doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do. And I don't, in our culture, we don't have that, especially here in the United States. Yeah. And it's only getting worse.
You mentioned that quote, do the right thing, is on our high school practice jerseys. It has it across the front of the jersey. Do the right thing. That's the team's motto. And these boys have just embraced that kind of culture and mentality. And when I say, hey, let's clean up the field and we have 20 balls and there's 19, I'll have 20 kids running around trying to find that one ball. And they've embraced that. And that's what it is. It's about doing the right thing of what you think is the right thing. And that's where it's also important, is it's about your character. Someone with good character doing the right thing will probably, 9 times out of 10, pick the right choice. Someone with bad character do the right thing might be, I'm going to complain about how crap my teammates are. I think that's the right thing. So you've got to be careful. What do you think do the right thing means? And now it comes back to someone's personality and character and how they were raised. So it is difficult. But I've always, when I got this position here, it was always the people first. I've got to get the right people on the staff, not necessarily the best coaches who are A licenses. I have let A licenses go from the club because I didn't like their character. So it's all about picking the right people first. And then once you've got the right people who are willing to just row in the right direction and say, yeah, this is the path that I'm willing to take with you. Now, every single one of those coaches are going to develop at different rates and different speeds. So that's what I've had to learn. I can't say, here's our game model, bang, I expect you to execute it. That's not going to happen. So now it's about getting the right people.
It is. I think that's the hardest thing. I don't think it goes back to what we talked about earlier with the Barcelona thing. It goes back to why. I think that chapter in your book you talked about was finding the why. I don't remember the exact title. I wish I had that in front of me, and your book sitting at my nightstand right now. But you talked about finding the why. And I think it from all directions. It's why the parents are there, why the players are there, why the coaches are there, and why the club is doing what they're doing. And I think coming from the aspect of a servant leadership really changes the perspective. I recently was talking to a coach, and he goes, why are clubs not offering free sessions every now and then to players to see where they're at, to give feedback, like private sessions, not charging because they're part of the club. That should be something the club just does. And parents, not to expect it, but it's giving back and serving through. I find that to be, like, he is, this one coach who I was talking to really hit a spot with me because he coaches because he loves coaching. It's not his full-time job. He has the mantra of trying to figure out what's the best and why the players are there and what will motivate the players to be the best. And I was talking, I flat out asked a coach recently, what is your 5-year plan as a coach? Because I wanted to know where they saw themselves in 5 years because I wanted to know what their plan was. And they go, I don't plan on coaching. I want to be on the more administrative side of the club. I don't always want to be having to focus on making sure I have 18 kids on roster or whatever it may be. And it was, he goes, I really want to see both sides and figure out from there. Or this is what I want to do forever. And at the end of the day, it made me take a step back. It's like, how can I help him achieve his goal? And because his goal is to help kids that I know. And I think if we all approach it with this, the servant mentality, yeah. I think things go so much farther because you get to learn so much more from others.
Yeah. And I've still got, obviously I've still got, I'm 54 and I still believe I've got a lot to learn. And I love the learning part and developing. But here at FC, I always laugh and joke and say, I've never coached a top team while I've had this job. I've always navigated towards, if we have three teams in an age group, that makes me uncomfortable because I don't want it to look like we've got three or four teams because we want money. So that makes me feel uncomfortable. So I go out and I coach those third and fourth teams. Whereas I want to help you help a child, and these were boys, these were U17 boys. We had four teams last year. And it's trying to convince a kid to play on a second team in the culture we're in is difficult. We've got four teams here. What are these kids on the third and fourth team going to feel like? So I went out and I ran both teams all year. I didn't get paid for it. And I said, no, this makes me really uncomfortable. I don't want anybody saying they're taking four teams for the money. I'm going to help these boys navigate playing on these third and fourth teams. And I loved it.
And I, as a parent, I don't see an issue having four teams deep. It's when they have 17 teams in the same age group. And that's a whole nother topic for another day.
I don't know how you manage that.
That's when these clubs have 300 coaches and they have 6,000, 7,000 kids playing in them.
Oh my gosh.
But I look at it from the perspective of the way it was described to me. You have your competitive team, you have your development competitive team, and you have your development team. And you have support players, you have playmakers, and you have your all-stars for each one of those teams. And your all-star player that's on your top team, your competitive team, may only be a supportive player and only can fill that role on your development team because he doesn't know how to play as an all-star because it's not to his level. And it, nothing against those players on that team. It is their all-star might just be a playmaker on the top team or a support player. Every team has that. And I was trying to think of your, what you talked about with all this stuff. And it's, I don't see this being an issue when clubs have maybe four teams in age group, because you might have a partial team that you can't get a full team, but parents really like the style of play that you guys have at your club and, or the coaching staff that you have. And it's not always about me as a parent. It's not always about the money. It's finding the right coach to mentor my player in this given moment.
Yeah. And that's how
that's the hard part.
Yeah. That's how I try to educate the boys that were on this fourth team. I'd say, look, I know emotionally and mentally it can be difficult. But if we only had one team in this age group and you were that one team, you would still be playing in this division because that's where your ability at the moment is where you're at. So you could be called, our top teams are called Navy. I said, so you could be FC Portland U17 Navy and you would all be happy with that. But we'd still be playing in Division 2. And that's fine. The game will give you more than whether you play on a fourth. I said, I played on a second team, a third team. I didn't play on a third team because in England we didn't have that many. But it was either you played on the first team or you're in the reserves. I played on second teams. You've just got to be in a good environment, love the game. But unfortunately, when we're in this culture now of they're hanging their hat on the why of playing soccer is, I want to be a Division I athlete. But I want to play pro. Now, I don't think that can be your why. I think it can be a dream that you have. But if that's your why, but time, I see it with kids every year, by the time they turn U16, U17, and they've had no offers from anybody, reality kind of hits home that, oh, I'm not going to do that. Or I'll stop playing. Should you can't, you've not loved it enough then. If you want to reach a certain dream, you have to love it.
Right.
You know, when I was younger, I practiced every single day and I played every single day, not because I'm hanging my hat on this, I want to be a professional soccer player. I'd love it. It's fun for me. If someone says play for this team, it's a B team. Play for this team, it's a C team. I'm playing. If there are a bunch of good guys, I can learn. I'm all in. Let's have some fun here. I think that's missing too from not just soccer, from sports in the US. Everybody thinks they're going to be a pro. I don't want to sound negative and try and squash that. Even my own son says, I want to play MLB. And I said, your goal is, can you make varsity high school? That's your goal. If you can't make that, then I think the rest is going to be tricky, isn't it? Right. So trying to help kids navigate, why are you playing?
See, I think – you go ahead, sorry.
No. I just think the love – because I love it, I'm not sure if you'd get that. And why do you play sports? I love it. I'm not sure if many kids would answer with that.
I'd probably say most kids won't. I think most younger kids play. I think you might get that out of the young kids because they just love hanging out with their friends and playing soccer. And then as they get older, it is, this is what I just do. Or it is, like you said, it's to fulfill the dream. And it's, I think we as a society in the United States wrap our, who we are by what we're doing or what we associate with. And we never fill that why. And I think that's so critical, is teaching them they are more than a soccer player. Every professional soccer player I've ever talked to says, I'm a professional soccer player. That's my job. I am this off the field. I'm a dad. I'm a husband. I'm a significant other to someone else. I am a brother, a son. That's who I am when I walk off the field. I'm not a soccer player anymore.
Yeah.
And I think we have to teach our young players, and this is the sports psych side that I find so fascinating, is teaching them who they are. Because normally when we have players that get derailed because of injuries, they lose sight of who they are. And it's teaching them, this is just part of your life. This is just the next phase to the next step. Yeah. And whatever it may be.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ian. Go on. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, I say with my players and with my own kids, I always ask them three questions. And it's, are you always going to be the best version of you, whatever that looks like? Some days it can look terrible, but are you always going to do your best? Like we spoke about, do the right thing. And then it's, yeah, I said, can you follow tasks? If someone sets you a task, can you follow it? Whether you get it right or not is a different thing. And then it's, are you going to be a great teammate and show it? And I always say, if you answer yes to all those three, I think you'll enjoy your sports experience. But, you know, I'm always with my son. I'm like, you don't have two of those at the moment. You're not the best version of yourself. I ask you to enter the dishwasher. I've got to ask you 30 times. You can't follow tasks. Yes, you're a fantastic person and you're good with other people. So you've got that. But the other two are missing and he wants to become a pilot. So I'm saying it's going to be hard for you if you're not the best version of yourself and you can't follow tasks. I said, I'm going to be getting on a plane with you. It's going to be doing loop the loops because you're pressing all these buttons. We laugh and joke about it, but I think trying to put it in a way where it's like these three simple questions actually say a lot about where you're heading in life. I think it's important to try and put it that way. If someone really wants to get to the top, and with me being in Oregon, you're not dealing with top athletes. If you're dealing with a top athlete, what do you want? What are you willing to do about it? Are you willing to suffer? Because it is hard. And I think we always look at sports personalities and think, oh, they've got it so easy. It is hard. I coached 2 years ago, I went into the USL and coached as an interim coach. It was so hard. I was driving 2 hours every day, 2 hours there, 2 hours back, then coaching at FC at night, next morning, getting up at 5, 2 hours there, training the guys, 2 hours back. people thought, oh, he's having such a good time. And you're like, that was actually, I loved it, but I was exhausted. It's not, oh, this is so much fun. And I loved it. It was fun. My wife thought I was an absolute lunatic, but it was hard. So people say, watching the guys playing in USL and how much they have these dreams of getting picked up by MLS and watching how hard it is for those guys. It is so difficult to get to the top of anything.
Right.
And people think once you're at the top, you should be happy. You're like, but because you're making so much money, what's wrong with you? You can still have mental problems if you're a millionaire. You don't get to have a free pass on any mental issues you have because you've got loads of money. I'd still prefer my happiness over any financial gain.
Right. And I think parents need to understand that. I think that is going back to what you talked about, is finding those small victories and how do we teach those moments? Because I feel like it's an all or nothing type mentality, going back to this winning at all costs, going back, you have to play in this alphabet league soup of leagues at the younger ages. And that's where you're going to find your happiness. It's going to be none of those things. If we hang our hat, like you said, on the wins and losses or how the team does, even if they play like crap on the pitch and end up winning, that's not, they have to see the truth. They have to see the small victories, but also be honest with the small losses within that game, because they may have won it on the score sheet, but they lost it on the pitch. And I don't think everyone sees it that way. I think.
Yeah. And it's so hard.
Circling back to our earlier conversation a little bit.
Yeah. And then that's what I found out over these last 2 years in a club setting where people are willing to jump at any time that the child doesn't get what they want, whether that's playing on the A team or the team loses. It's very hard to build that culture of togetherness if people are always willing to jump. So last year I started coaching high school for the first time, and people are saying, oh, your way, this philosophy won't work in high school. But it's actually been opposite. It has worked because these kids can't go anywhere. They've already got this tribal culture of togetherness because they're all at the same school. And I've gone in there and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm still trying to work at club and create this culture. It's actually been pretty easy to create this culture of do the right thing, be a great teammate, have great character. And it's like my second year in the job, and I've just won back-to-back coaches of the year, and the boys have just, boys won the Metro title, and the school hadn't won it since 1990.
I am laughing because the whole reason I have you on this is to talk about the U.S. soccer, and it's making me laugh because it's going back, it's creating a culture of doing the right thing, creating the culture of celebrating the small victories, celebrating what you can celebrate versus the chaos that we're in.
Yeah. That's why doing the high school was like, oh, in this setting of people can't leave if you lose, or if they don't make varsity, they leave. The kids, it was so easy for me. I'm like, this is amazing. And the boys went through the season. We didn't, were undefeated, and we conceded 2 goals. And that's from a team that hasn't won the Metro title for 34 years.
I think that goes back to creating a culture. So trying to create a culture, you've been successful doing this now and creating it at the high school, creating it with FC Portland, making sure I said it right.
Yeah.
And how do we create this? And to me, this is the bigger issue. And it starts at the top. If we want to be a dominating force in the world of soccer, how do we create from the top? How do we dismantle what's there and scrap it all? Because it's a bunch of bureaucrats. That's how I feel as a parent looking at U.S. soccer. It's a bunch of bureaucrats and parents that are still living vicariously through their kids in some cases because of instances that's happened in the last couple of years with the U.S. men's side. The women's side is now, the rest of the world is finally catching up to the United States over the last 2-3 years. And we're seeing, I hate to say it, I'm on the U.S. women's national team, so we're going to win. And if we don't win, it's someone else's fault. And we're starting to see the dismantling or the falling apart of the women's side, because our drive to compete in the United States is not there. It's more about those few moments on social media or being stuck on a tablet. So how do we start from the top and work it way down to have the cultures that you've talked about in the last few minutes?
I think
to create those moments.
Yeah, I think it comes back to what we spoke about, Ian, you know, the servant leadership. I know that if US soccer had this kind of culture of servant leadership, my job would be easier, because if I'm doing something that they, if US soccer started, I know they have a long-term plan, but it's hidden away on their website if you wanted to find it. They don't talk about it. If you had this long-term plan, I would scrap FC's long-term plan. If US soccer wanted, obviously it won't be different because we're developing players and it wouldn't be that different, but I'd certainly implement a lot of the stuff that they say. But it goes back to servant leadership. It's like you, if you look at any single job, soccer job in Canada, whether it's in the professional game or whether it's at youth, you look on that job application and it will say, you must follow the Canadian long-term player development plan. So everyone's bought into whether they implement it or not. We spoke about that as well. It's about actions. But at least on every job you apply for that's related to coaching soccer, one of the criteria is you must follow that. So they've brought it into their culture. You look at any job that we apply for here, a college job, you've got to have a degree. It doesn't matter whether you've got 3 soccer licenses from 3 different countries and you've done your work on your development on being a soccer coach. That's not one of the criteria to get a job here. Any job you have at youth club or director of coaching must coach 3 teams. You're like, well, how can I do my job as a director if I'm running around coaching 3 teams?
Right.
So we don't have that culture of servant leadership. What can we do for you? We just don't. You only hear from US soccer when they have these ID camps in your area or the national team is doing well, or talking about elite, and are we going to change the age now to grade year? And that's kind of like a distraction. It looks like, oh, they're doing something. And then after about 8 months, you're like, this is stupid. No, and it's like, it's 2 years ago, they brought in a new strategic plan. And I put that in my book, foster the best playing environment. Have a world-class organization. I don't know what that means. Create winning teams. That was one of your criteria on your strategic plan. That's a terrible message to send out to families. Create winning teams because we have this winning culture. The parents are not going to look at that and say, oh, they mean winning national teams. The parents are going to be like, oh, they mean winning teams all over the country, whether I'm playing rec. If we're winning, we're in line with their strategic plan. It's just, that doesn't instill togetherness what we're doing right now.
And you never will with that mentality.
No. And that's why I'm really worried. And I think the World Cup is going to be a distraction for them. People from the outside who are, all the commentators from the England are going to be like, oh, soccer's massive in the US. It's growing. They have no idea what's going on. Oh, MLS is growing. And so the World Cup's going to be a distraction for them. And then 2 years after the World Cup, when all that hype's died down, we're going to be back right where we are now, if not worse.
You talked about that in your book. And you talked about, even after the World Cup, expect to have more leagues pop up and more, you have to be in part of this league to do this. And as a parent.
Yeah, more are popping up right now. MLS now have seen that there's going to be a market. There's going to be a market now for going to youth clubs and saying, hey, do you want MLS? This youth club will be like, oh my gosh, we can attract more players by putting MLS next on our website. players are going to get drawn into that. And now the corrupt system continues.
And I think that if you look at, I'm not trying to get into the politics of youth soccer on this podcast, but if you look at what USL is doing, they'll have a Division I soccer team starting in 2 years from now, or a year from now, actually.
Yeah.
And looking at them competing against MLS. And this was a conversation I had locally about this. And it's, is it going to create, will they create a youth organization called USL Next, let's call it that. For,
I'm sure it's coming.
Compete with, it's coming. It's because they'll have to, because all these clubs will do the same thing. But will they be forced to have their hands tied like the MLS was? Because the MLS was told if they wanted to be part of FIFA World Stage, they have to have a free academy. Well, when I heard that, awesome. When you go play for one of these MLS clubs, it's all free. No, it's only the top team.
Yeah.
So you're talking U13 and older. They might scholarship more kids at the younger ages, but they have to be the top team. And that's it. It's not the whole program. It is. That's how everything's being paid for. The conversations I've had with behind closed doors about how MLS club pays for things, it just blew my mind at where the cost structure comes from. It doesn't come from, in many cases, advertisement. It comes from the parents having their kids play for an MLS club. I will say, watching here how two organizations are working together dealing with the MLS Next program, I found it very fascinating. They are working together hand in hand. Well, my players aren't good enough to be on the top team. These players aren't. We're going to send them down to your team, but they can still play in MLS Next. And then they're sending up their better players up to the MLS Next. And it seems to be working fine. It doesn't seem to be a, they're competing with each other. They're still competing with each other, but at the same time, they're sharing players because it benefits the growth of the player.
Yeah.
And it's the first time I've seen that. And at that level, and I was really taken back by them actually doing that and actually working, because in the past, I call it hoarding of players and hoarding of talent. Yeah. And it's crazy. In your book, you talked about the leagues coming together and being one.
Yeah,
I'll never see that happen in my lifetime, because at the end of the day, it is, we live in the United States. This is a corporate America society, and the dollar rules. It's not the better development for the player. It is, these are businesses at the end of the day, and that's what we have to remind ourselves. But what should parents look for then in these leagues and what they're doing? Because I have my opinion of them. I'll say it off the air very vividly, but on on conversations, I'm very careful. Eventually it'll come out what I say, but at the end of the day, you have all these alphabet leagues, and in my opinion, if you can't beat the teams in your backyard, you shouldn't be traveling. You shouldn't be encouraged to travel far every other weekend to play soccer when you go out and get crushed by teams in your backyard. The example I was given the other day was, I've been using it for about a year now, was a family traveled to Colorado and they crushed the team there, and they came back and played against a team that's local and got their butts handed to them because the other team was better, but they can't play in ECNL because their club does not support six teams, or yes, one team per age group,
yeah,
to play in ECNL. And at the end of the day, it breaks my heart as a parent, because the team that they lost to is the better team, but because the club has enough teams to field.
It'd be great. I think I put it in the book about the cream rising to the top.
Right.
You know, so in England, if you said, oh, I'm playing in the Northwest Counties, which was a semi-pro league in the UK, that's all they have to say. And you're like, oh, you'd be a pretty decent player. Where here, you can be saying all these acronym leagues. It doesn't say anything about whether you're a good team or not. So I think, I'm not sure if it would happen, and you're right, probably not happen ever, where all these leagues get together, and that would be a problem, deciding who's the top. And that's what I put in the book. Let's say ECNL is the creme de la creme, the whole country, and then you've got your six age groups there. If you finish bottom of your conference, you go down to the RL conference. You finish bottom of that, you go down to E64. You finish bottom of that, you're in GA. You finish bottom of GA, you go back to your local leagues. I think that would eradicate all this noise of my child's playing. If someone says, oh, my child's playing ECNL, you'd be like, wow. Then they're having the national champion, and then it's a true national champion instead of having national champion at U15s, and you've got six.
Right.
Six teams are now saying, well, we're national champions. Well, we are. Well, we are. It's like, y'all can't be.
So yeah, it doesn't make sense.
No. So I think, unfortunately, when you're asking, how do we help parents with this? We go back to our culture again, where I don't think they care. As long as they're spouting off some kind of league, I don't think they care. I've had conversations with parents who have said, we're going joining their RL league, and the club doesn't have one.
Right.
And at that age, and I said, they don't have it at that age. I know, but they said, we're on it. And I went, okay, so they're lying to you, and you're still saying, yeah, that's good, we're going. They're like, we're on the RL team. And I'm like, they don't have one, but you're still going, and they don't have one. That's mind-blowing to me.
We always joke with my daughter's team, every team's a pre-US national men's team or pre-national women's team.
Yeah.
That there's no pre-ECNL, pre-MLS next. It's all pre-national team because that's the end goal, isn't it?
I mean, we need to change our name to pre-Real Madrid.
Right. At the end of the day, that's, you can put pre in front of anything. And we have clubs here that don't even play in ECNL, and they're putting pre-ECNL teams on their...
Oh my God.
Because they're competing in the pre-ECNL league here, which is a whole nother topic.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've covered so much, and I've only got so few questions.
That's all right. We can do it again at some other time as well, mate.
Yes. But I want you how do I describe this? I think this is something that the why and creating an authentic self. I think these were the two things that really stuck out to me in your book the most, because clubs are authentic. They're authentic to the chasing, not all clubs. I'm not going to put that out there. Not all clubs and not all coaches in clubs, but many people, myself included, I've had this conversation. None of them feel like clubs are authentic. Coaches are authentic. Many feel that the why is being missed and the being authentic to who they are. And they go hand in hand. And when a club is truly authentic and seems to have the servant leadership mentality, it outweighs the cost.
Mm.
And or it means less money in the pocket for the club. Or it outweighs the cost of the parents because they're willing to pay more because they are doing the things you talked about in your book. And if for everyone listening to this, you should read this book because he lays it out. He talks about building it up or tearing it down and rebuilding the foundation. And that I think if we as parents could capture anything, and you can share what you think else is more needs to be here, but it's being authentic to who the club needs to be. And I think you talk about the authentic leadership, not authentic leadership, servant leadership and being authentic. And I think if these clubs and coaches do those two things, they will answer the why or find the why from your player. What else would you say they need to do in this moment to better guide themselves through all this? Because at the end of the day, your book's 150 pages, and I think I probably could talk. It's probably a 6-hour audiobook, maybe a little bit shorter than that. And I could probably spend 14 hours, 15 hours easily talking on this topic with everything in your book. But how do we, I'm rambling. Sorry about
no,
that.
No. I know where you're going with it, but it's like, it always comes back to culture, doesn't it, Ian?
Yes.
Not just soccer, the way that the world's going, not just the US, the way that the world's going, authenticity, I believe, is disappearing. I don't know what the reason is for that, social media or this competitive world of not whether someone's right or wrong, you've just got one over on someone else. It's like if you're on this side and someone on the opposite side has been hurt, that's all you care about, not whether something's right or wrong. Telling lies now is just a normal thing in today's society. No one gets called out for it, really. It's just like, oh, and there's that many lies floating around in sports. It's baffling. It's, and then you just baffle them with BS and you start thinking, oh, I don't know. I feel stupid. I'm not going to question that. But there's just no authenticity to say. It's like, it also comes from your upbringing, doesn't it? And who you are as a person. If you say to someone, hey, is it easy for you to be kind? And you're saying, yeah, right, now be horrible. Or telling someone with poor character, hey, can you be a kind person? It's going to be hard for them as it would be for someone kind to start being a horrible person. I think this authenticity probably comes from beliefs. You can't act at being authentic, can you? You can't say, oh, I'm going to be nice today, because we're going to deal with adversity. And when adversity hits, your true character comes out. And that's why the kind of sick side of me loves seeing my kids fail, loves seeing my players fail, because I want to see, right, how are you going to react now? Because this is your true self coming out. How are you going to be? And that's why we're not authentic as parents, because when we win, we're all high-fiving, telling your child you love them. When we lose, you're not high-fiving anyone. You walk into the car, you never mention that you love your child. Where wouldn't you be thinking as a child, oh, they only tell me they love me when we win, and how proud of them they are. So I just don't think, and this is just my opinion, so I don't want to upset anybody. I just don't think, and I only can comment as a country, I only can comment as a state where I live, I don't think we have authenticity. I think a lot of stuff is fake. You know, you meet someone, Ian, and you've not seen them for a while. How many times do they say to you, we should get together? And you never do. And I always say, no, it's not good. When they say that sentence, I say, it's not going to happen. And they're like, what? I went, it's not going to happen. Because this is what we always say. I think women are better at getting together and socializing than men are. I think men are really, really poor at it. And men have got to be better at it, because on the mental health side, the suicide rate for men is a lot higher. So men have got to be better at being authentic. I think women are great at socializing and getting together. Men are useless at it. But I just think it comes from your upbringing and who you are as a person. Some people might say I'm not authentic, but being just natural and who I am comes easy to me. Sometimes it can get me in trouble because I say what I think. And the title of the book, I didn't write the book to tick anybody off, to upset anybody. I didn't write the book for that. I wrote the book because I'm really, really concerned about what is happening and what I'm seeing. And I'm only seeing it in my area of the country, but I'm sure it carries on. A lot of people from the UK have wrote to me since reading the book and said, that's happening here.
And it's happening everywhere.
It's happening everywhere. So I'm really concerned. Our kids shouldn't be growing up in environments like this. Sports is vital for them in learning valuable life lessons. But the lessons that they're learning are not good for preparing them for when they become adults and parents. It's just, yeah, authenticity is a big thing that I've always said the only people that understand probably authenticity and teamwork in the US are the military, your first responders. They get it. Every coach I've had who's been in the military has been amazing. They get it. If you're not a team player, it can cost you your life.
Right.
So these people, they get it. And I think that's where, like, US soccer, we got to try and tap into that side of getting people from the military chatting about stuff, getting first responders chatting about how important teamwork is. But US soccer, having a TV channel, they've got so much money. Having a TV channel that's free, that shows games, that shows practice sessions, that shows the importance of long-term development plan, and just shouting all this stuff from the rooftop so parents are now getting educated by the top people in the country. So now my job of, oh, we're caring about the person first, will be a lot easier. And I just, that's where I think, that's, I think, the path we've got to take, where the governing bodies have to take this mentality of what can we do for you?
Right. So I'm going to follow this up with my favorite question. And I don't know if you've listened to any of my episodes yet, but my favorite question is, who's been the greatest influence on you as a player and then you as a coach? Two separate questions, two separate answers. It can be the same people, but they're two separate questions.
Do you only want me to pick one?
No, you can pick, you answer both, please.
Right. So I think my dad is on both, because my dad obviously instilled all this, be kind, be who you are, never tell lies, never do wrong to anybody, have manners. He drilled this into the family, and he was relentless. If you didn't say please or thank you, you didn't get anything. If you didn't hold the door for somebody, there's one time when I think I was like 7 years old and I didn't hold the door for a woman, and he called her back, made her walk through and made me hold it. He was just relentless on manners and being respectful, being kind. So that's who I want to be as a husband, as a father, as a friend. That's what I want people to say about me, whether they will or not, I don't know. But I want people to be like, oh, he always tried his best. He was kind. He was always open to discussing stuff with people. So I think because of that, and you carry that over to coaching, I may not be the best coach, but I'm always trying to be, I think I'm the hardest worker on whatever team I'm on. And I show that, and I'm always there for people. So I think I'm rambling on a bit here, Ian, but I think my dad is the most important, was the most important. It just went off then. Yeah. You still got me?
I still got you.
Yeah. Yeah. So my dad, he was a massive influence. And what was weird was, growing up, he worked away a lot. He was in Africa, he was in Saudi Arabia, and he was away a lot. He was a steel erector. He put buildings up, but he always had that. I always used to call him Columbo. When you watch Columbo, and as soon as the show starts, you're like, he knows who's done it, and it goes on for a full hour, and at the end, you're like, he already knew. That's me and my brother used to call my dad Columbo, because that guy knew everything. And even when we did something wrong, we always owned up to it, because we thought, he knows. He definitely knows. So he had that massive influence on me. And I don't know why, for someone who wasn't there a lot for me, which is kind of weird. But if you say like coaching, I think on soccer, it started with Liverpool from the 70s, watching that team. They were a team, and watching how they won so much by being a group of humble men who played together, that had a massive influence on me. Then when I played for the same local team for 15 years, and these guys were the same that I played with. Humble guys, no complaining, worked hard. Whenever there was a problem, we dealt with it, and we were very successful as a team. And like I said, I played for them for 15 years, so it was great. And then when I coached at Preston North End, that was another big influence on me. Was the director there was Gary Peters. He put me with an A-licensed coach, Jed. And Jed was a massive influence on me. And the whole coaching staff were, because they were all humble people, kind, do whatever it takes, no complaining. I've been in environments that suit my personality, but I've also been lucky that I found these people. And then when I started at FC in 2008, it was started by Clive Charles, who had that similar process. It's about the person. And then once I coached here, it's, oh, I would love to eventually help run FC Portland. And so now I'm here. It's like I say, I don't want to sound like I'm bragging, but being authentic is it just comes natural to me because of my upbringing. And money and stuff like money, I have no interest in money. It drives my wife crazy, because she'll be like, oh, can you go and get some milk? And I'll just joke with her and say, oh, if I take $100, will I have enough? And she's just go and get the milk. I'm like, I know, I don't know. How much is it? I don't know. Have I got enough with $100? And then she'll be like, oh, have you checked the bank account lately? And I said, I've not looked at the bank account for 10 years. I don't even, I've no clue. So I'm useless on that kind of stuff. But I just always want to help people. So many people have reached out since reading the book, Ian, and I've had meeting you. I've met so many people now because of the book. And as soon as they reach out, I message them straight away and say, here's my number, give me a call. And I've had conversations with people now from all over the world. This afternoon, I've got a conversation with some guy from Bolton, my hometown, who's a director in Phoenix of a club. And he said he's read the book. He wants to chat with me. So I'm chatting with him this afternoon. So it's so good. I have no shame telling people what I do and how we do it. It might not work for them, but I'll share all my ideas with everybody because I want kids to love the game. And if you don't agree with what I'm doing, a lot of people don't agree with the game model. And I always say it's usually the people that can't implement one or don't have the guts to implement one that call out why a game model's bad. But why would you not want all your staff rowing in the same direction with some direction from the leader? I don't understand that. But if people don't believe in it, it's no problem. But I would like to know what are your ideas then of running your club. But don't just say someone else is bad, but you've got nothing else to say. That's usually the case, isn't it? Your idea is terrible. That don't work. Okay, what do you do?
I
don't do anything. I think doing something's better than doing nothing, isn't it? Yeah, so that was a long answer, mate.
Hey, everyone. I hope you all enjoyed this week's episode with Jason. This is the last part of the two-part series. I don't know what to say. If you're not following him on his social medias, from LinkedIn to Facebook and all of his other social medias, I don't know what to tell you. He posts some really great stuff every single day, or most days. If you are looking to finish up your education on what's going on with youth soccer and a blueprint to fix it, his book is outstanding. I won't go into too many details because we really did not scratch the surface of the 20 or 30 questions I sent him. We covered about 5. With that being said, I really did enjoy this interview because it's an eye-opening conversation. And we talked as parents and as a coach. He talked as a coach, I talked as a parent. And he could also talk as a parent, which was great to hear. But the dialogue and the conversation that we had regarding his book was great. And if you start looking at the issues that we're having, we as parents must go back and figure this out. He really got me hooked on culture. It's the current buzzword. I know there'll always be buzzwords going on that get ruined because they get overused. But if you start studying what it means to have culture and to build a program around culture, it doesn't happen overnight. But small changes can happen. And he outlined some of those small changes that can happen. We as parents have to buy into them. Jason is a great guest. If you're having more questions, I guarantee if you post on one of his social media posts, he'll reach out to you and go back and forth in the comment section. I don't know where to start to close this up, but I am still thinking heavily about this, and I finished the book back in February. And as we were talking about this book, I think this is important for the upcoming tryout season, things to think about, things to talk about when you're listening to coaches talk, things that they need to have in their vocabulary, things that they need to understand, and arm yourself with knowledge from his books on how to look for developers. So I hope you all once again enjoyed this episode, but go find his book and I promise you won't be disappointed. If you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm
really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.